people, of course, talking all around the world about the passing of Dr. Buttar. No one is really sure exactly what happened at this point. We do know, just for those of you who don't know, that he did have a stroke last, I think, December. He had been identified as having myocarditis, pericarditis. He was set up for some real health problems, bigger health problems, and they apparently paid him a visit, and that was the end of Dr. Buttar. His heart may have just stopped. He very likely may have had a much worse stroke than the first one, and it just took him out. We do know that he was ostensibly not worried about shedding very much, although he did mention it as a probable cause, but he was around a lot of people. You go to these events, and you can't help it. You end up shaking hands with dozens, maybe hundreds of people ultimately. You talk to them. You're being shed upon, and he should know better. He was days away from his newest big health conference he was going to have. So anyhow, whatever happened, you know, he has a lot of fans out there, a lot of support. I always wondered how many of his fans were actually drinking their own urine, which was one of his less inspired ideas, in my view. But he is being talked about. His efforts are, I think, maybe not A-list, but close, just to give you an idea of his stature if you didn't know much about him. He was out there, well-known. But there was a video put out, and we played some of it. We're going to finish it, because it was clearly a major hit piece on ivermectin, using the death of Dr. Buttar to propel it. Now, ivermectin is a pharmaceutical. And for those of you who don't know, there are some very important pieces of information you need to know. Many of you listening right now have it at home. You have it in capsule form, pill form, tablet form, or the tube form. It can be remarkably helpful. It has saved many lives, and it will turn very sick people around, sometimes in a matter of hours. And that said, you always want to be very careful with any pharmaceutical. You want to know what it is. You want to do your research. There have been millions of authentic tests with people who have come through with flying colors. So it has tremendous amount of laboratory backup for its efficacy and safety. It's, a must. It may be our frontline. Well, I don't know if anything else comes to mind that would be as highly recommended as ivermectin if you're sick with this virus, even shedding sickness or even injected sickness. It's a very important product. All right, let's go and hear from Erica and get some more background on this thing. You know a lot more about it than I do. Welcome back. Glad to have you here, as always.
Thank you.
So tell us more about ivermectin.
No, you stated that very well. You know, it's the closest thing to an antidote that we have for this bioweapon illness.
Right.
You know, many, many people have used it. The FLCCC, Frontline Critical Care Doctors, are very, very fond of it. I don't think they prescribe it indiscriminately, as some have said. There are some contraindications with it, but in general, it's very safe and very effective. I was just reading that it has 95 randomized controlled trials showing efficacy and benefit, which I think exceeds most, if not all, pharmaceutical drugs. I don't think any drug comes close to having that many supportive clinical trials.
Could even get on the same platform with them.
Come
on. 95? So
no.
There's something to keep in mind when you're doing your research about ivermectin. 95 clinical trials, real clinical trials. All right.
Again, there are some contraindications in that people with certain genetic anomalies with their pea glycoprotein, which is a permeability glycoprotein, it helps keep toxins out of cells. Some people have a genetic aberration that would allow this medication to accumulate in their cells and result in neurotoxicity. And then, of course, if you're taking any other drugs that might impair that detox pathway, that could also encourage that outcome. But in general, I personally don't know of anybody that's experienced any adverse outcome from using this drug. We've never said to use it casually or indiscriminately or prophylactically. It is a drug, and it should be respected as a drug. And you know, be fully informed when you take it.
I think we should mention again how many clinical trials compared to virtually none. They don't even bother with clinical trials anymore now. The FDA, CDC, they don't seem to care. It's just science by proclamation. Yeah, this is fine. It's no problem.
It is, and there's been a war against ivermectin right from the beginning. As soon as it was obvious that this thing was highly effective in turning people, or, you know, turning this illness around in people that were critically ill, they made every effort to get it away from people. In Canada, you can't even buy it.
Public enemy, number one, for the government assets out there working the internet, no doubt. They were down on it right away, too quickly.
You know, and then it became that you know, if you wanted to buy it from a tractor supply store, farm store, you had to show a picture of your horse.
An ag store. You had to go in with a picture of you and your horse so they wouldn't sell you a tube of ivermectin.
So it just seems that anything of potential benefit for people in dealing with this bioweapon illness is mm-hmm. Well, they're trying to make it off limits.
I mean, all right.
And
what
now
else would...
here's a smear campaign. If they can't literally take it off the market, they're going to try to scare people off it.
This was clearly a hit piece. It's not journalism. It's a hit piece. And the phraseology and the words, I think we mentioned that last time, are very important to note. When you hear the term pushing something, that's a drug pusher, and it sounds negative. There are a lot of things that you're going to hear here in this video that I think are important. You'll pick them up. I pointed some out last time. I want you all to be aware of when you're watching these videos, these are not journalists. They're either entertainers, commentators, or just green screeners. And that's it. And they have followings, and people believe in them. So we're here to try and suggest that you've got to be real careful, more careful now than ever. These people are potentially dangerous. This is a hit piece on ivermectin, and they used the death of Dr. Buttar to fuel it. All right, so here we go.
That he never fixed. Specifically, he's one of these doctors pushing ivermectin recklessly. And it really, really frustrates me.
See, a journalist would never use the term recklessly. That's a judgmental call. Journalism is who, what, where, why, how. Those are the five basics. And that's it.
And it pisses me off.
That's another non-journalistic term.
And all these negative safety signals. How these doctors push it as a miracle cure, practically. Without...
I don't know one doctor who's ever said it's a miracle cure. It's a very important adjunct to whatever you're going to try to do to get well. And as Eric has said, it's the closest thing that we know about to an antidote for this crisis. And it has been used millions of times on human beings. And I guarantee you, they would not give this to 20 and 30 and $50 million racehorses. If it were dangerous in the least. And they do all the time to deworm them, to get the parasites out. So think about it.
We're saying the side effects without ever saying the risks, without pointing out this drug has not been tested for carcinogenic effects, which is right there on the fact sheet. And then these people go around lecturing about the truth about cancer and advanced medicine conference, that kind of stuff. This is basic toxicity of a pesticide called ivermectin.
This is basic toxicity of a pesticide called ivermectin. That is not journalism.
We'll talk about that in a second, but let's watch this clip first. This is an interesting clip from May the 17th, only 3 days ago. And by the way, he had a conference scheduled for next week, and he had been promoting this conference, and it's got a bunch of ivermectin pushers at the conference.
And okay, is that a fair characterization of a conference with a multiplicity of different speakers pushing their ideas of what really ought to be pushed? The cancellation of the event was made 2 days ago, I think. They have canceled it now. So
yes.
Himself pushes it. For example, here. New JAMA paper shows ivermectin blows the COVID vaccine out of the water. What an embarrassment for the CDC.
Ivermectin blows the COVID vaccine out of the water. Who has ever compared the two for efficacy? Have you ever seen anything like that? I never have.
No.
Who's even putting them on the same platform? I don't get it. Weird.
Want to learn more? Join me on Telegram. But let's watch this clip because he uses the death of a reporter to make the case that the vaccines should be investigated, or he almost just implies that it killed him. So I think it's on the table for me to critique his ivermectin pushing and ask if it had a role in his decline. In his own case,
there are people who are suggesting that he committed suicide, that he was poisoned, and now this gentleman is suggesting that ivermectin did him in. Never mind, he had a major stroke, myocarditis, and pericarditis, and had lost how many pounds? I think about 80 pounds in several
months. Oh, it was substantial. Yes, substantial.
So obviously having major health issues. And he did say, in very clear prose, that he thought that shedding was responsible for his health problems, period.
Yeah.
All right, here's this little clip.
So let's watch this.
Without doubt, Dr. Fauci is, in your mind, he is a government bureau.
All right, this is an interview with Drew Griffin. Now, I guess I should play this, Erica, just because it's here. I can't jump over it too easily. But Drew Griffin was a CNN, I guess, a reporter or a journalist, allegedly. And he has the set, he's screen left, and Dr. Batar is screen right. You'll see the video. It's around. And he's asking him questions that no honorable journalist would ask. This is called ambush journalism, okay? Ambush journalism. It's basically putting words in someone's mouth, and that is not what the news is supposed to be. Now, let's listen to it. Drew Griffin.
He is a government bureaucrat, and you're comparing him to Hitler.
Well, I mean,
to Nazis.
I am.
Who killed 6 million Jews.
I think this is good. This number is...
All right, Dr. Batar is talking about Tony Fauci, and this reporter, Mr. Griffin, is now raising the image of the Holocaust and other things that have nothing to do with what Dr. Batar said about Fauci. We've said the same thing about Fauci for what? How long? Over 2 years. The guy's one of the worst of the worst.
Higher.
You think Dr. Fauci is involved in some kind of plot to kill millions of people? I just want to
make sure
I understand.
Again, Drew, I'm a reasonable person. You're asking me what I think, and I said it could be this, but I can tell you that Dr. Fauci is not an innocent bystander. He's very well aware of what he's doing, and the extent of it and his involvement, I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. I think that the COVID vaccine is very effective at what it was designed for, perhaps, but it's not preventing death. Certainly not.
It's not preventing death?
No. People don't die from COVID. You've already seen the data. So why are we getting a vaccine that causes more deaths than the problem itself?
6.34 billion doses of this vaccine have been given. If you're right, people be dropping dead all around this whole...
It's not orchestrated to do that. Each vaccine has been geared up. So you can look at the ingredients of the vaccines themselves. It's all been published. We already see thousands of people dying. This Delta variant is all vaccine injury. I mean, the CDC's own data is showing that now. I don't want to be part of this mass genocide that I see happening. And I think that what's going on right now will be remembered as a worst time in history compared to what World War II happened.
You are raising doubt about a vaccine.
I hope I am, because I hope more people take heed of the warning that is necessary.
You think I'm vaccinated, right? You think I have a time bomb in me and I'm going to die?
Well, I hope not, but I'll be happy to meet you in 3 years and then see how you're doing.
But you think that's possible?
I think that it's probable.
I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this guy, but how I'm stunned that he still has a license. But I mean, this is just incredible.
That's Anderson Cooper speaking, and Drew Griffin is screen right as they're doing this back and forth.
Stuff that this guy is saying. This guy is disinforming patients he doesn't even know or meet, and that is the problem. People sitting at home on the internet believing that this guy.
We have some stunningly heartbreaking news to share with you this morning, that our colleague, our friend, and truly distinguished CNN journalist Drew Griffin passed away in the last 24 hours.
14 months after he ambushed Dr. Buttar, Drew Griffin died suddenly. All right?
So it was, and I appreciate you indulging me by showing that, but it actually, that footage of the interviewer that was taken with a hidden camera, and it's never been seen before, but you can see that he was challenging me, and they were basically accusing me of warning people, and then 14 months later, he's dead.
And that's interesting. So that interview was never seen before, and Dr. Buttar captured it with a friend of his, obviously there on the set, with a hidden camera. Otherwise, we would have no record of that. But it's quite a case in point of how not to conduct yourself as a journalist. That's interesting. 14 months afterward, he got his karmic reward.
Nobody's
that?
Death is desired, obviously, but I like to believe if you follow the monotheistic religions that revenge is not of ours, revenge is God's right. And of course, God is not revengeful, but many of us are taught that. So there is a process of evolution that's taking place here. The planet itself is a live entity, and humans are like fleas on a dog. The dog is going to change. The planet's going to change. It doesn't care whether we're here or not. I did not realize how many people were this foolish. In fact, I have said this publicly a number of times, and then I think some people started thinking I was actually serious about it, but I got to the point where I would say that, at this point, I'm starting to think that maybe Bill Gates may be onto something. I think maybe this depopulation agenda he has may have some grounds that, that can stand, because there's just too many stupid people alive right now. Maybe the vaccine agenda is to take those people out. Now, of course, I'm saying that facetiously. I don't want anybody to die, but the point is, more and more people are starting to see the truth. They're seeing the hypocrisy themselves. They're witnessing it. They can see that, don't do this and don't do that. But hey, you can get in a plane. You can't socialize in a people, but you can get on a plane and travel. And then, you gotta wear a mask, so that protects you. But maintain 6 feet. But then you can sit next to somebody cramped up, in the middle of the seat, in the middle of the aisle, and that's okay. And you can't eat or drink, but you can take your mask off because the virus knows not to bug you and not to affect you while you take your mask off, so you can drink your water and eat your peanuts. So it's just, at a certain point, you realize that let the survival of the fittest, Darwinism, whatever you want to call it, let it take its place and let these people just eliminate themselves from the genetic pool.
Yeah, there comes a point where you just don't bother trying anymore. I was just saying that to someone, the other day, because there was a guy.
So I think we really need to look into the...
All right, now here's the narrator again. And back to the hit on ivermectin. This is a big one. So pay attention to how he conducts himself.
So I think we really need to look into the ivermectin angle here. Did he actually believe his own advice? Was he taking ivermectin? That's one question I have. And that aside, I think it needs to be pointed out, when everybody else is fawning over him after he died, I think this is too important to overlook. He's been pushing ivermectin. He's part of the ivermectin pushing cult. And they never tell people about the side effects. They never tell people about the 13-year-old boy who's put in a coma by one pill, one ivermectin pill.
They never talk about the rat studies, the insect studies, raising serious questions about its carcinogenicity potential. I find it extremely disturbing. But there's the ivermectin crew that's running around pushing this drug that people can buy enough to overdose on for $12 off Amazon, delivered first thing in the morning before they have time to think it over, because they trust these people, because it sounds like they're saying the truth about the vaccines. And in my opinion, they weaponized the trust by not telling people the toxicity of this poison they're pushing. And it's so readily available. It's very reminiscent to me of like the Tide Pods, the Tide Pod Challenge, where people would be conned into eating toxic Tide Pods because somebody told them to. So I've seen study after study after study on ivermectin toxicity, and it's never addressed. I've been trying to get a debate going. I've been trying to get one of the proponents to come on the channel for a heated exchange. It never happens. So I find it disturbing that Dr. Buttar is dead. I find his advice before he died disturbing. And I wonder if ivermectin played a role in his fast decline. I also don't like Darwinism jokes, where people are tricked into taking poison to die off in your life.
People are tricked into taking poison like ivermectin to die off. No, people were tricked into rolling up their sleeves and to take a vaccine that is not a vaccine. It is a bioweapon owned by the Department of Defense and the Pentagon. That's what should be being talked about here. We've made it quite clear about the studies that ivermectin has been put through, how many doses have been given. We've also recommended that people do not take it prophylactically, that it be kept at home in case you need it. And a lot of people have needed it, and it has come through magnificently for an awful lot of people. But be careful whenever you take any pharmaceutical.
About it, there's nothing funny about it. And this is something that I think is being socially engineered into people, to be so callous that they laugh at genocide, that they make little jokes about it. Oh, I think Bill Gates is right. Fuck you, man.
Okay, again, high-level journalism there. We don't laugh at genocide. We've been on the air here in our third year now, trying to help people understand, in a larger sense, the reality of what we're facing. What we're facing is a biological weapon that was designed brilliantly to do only one thing, and that's kill people. And it's doing it every day around the clock. And if a year and a half ago, 6.34 billion injections had been given, I don't know where that stat might be today. It could be 7 billion by now. I thought that stat was a little more current, but it goes back a year and a half. Anyway, ivermectin, anything you want to say to wrap it up?
No, I mean, I can personally vouch for what I've seen with it. There was one vax-injured person that I've been acquainted with for some time now who developed myocarditis after, I think it was two or three Pfizer shots, and was in just horrendous, excruciating pain for, oh, a couple of weeks, and was recommended to take some ivermectin. And she said, upon taking the ivermectin, it was the first relief she had had from the pain since it started, and practically in tears.
I know one gentleman, two gentlemen, who came down with either COVID or they were shed upon to the extent that they were sick, seriously sick. And both took the tube and a little, what is it, half inch, whatever, out of the tube. And within 24 hours, they were both virtually back to normal. Not quite, but very close. So those are firsthand. They're not just raw anecdotes. They're real experiences. I know these people. So, and that goes a long way to help people when they talk to others who have done this, taken it, and had results. It's rather than a big campaign, they're actually talking to people who have stepped in and done it. And it works. And now some, I guess most hospitals have it. Don't they have to have it on stock, in stock?
That's a better question for Nurse Ann. I don't know.
She'll be on Friday, by the way. Nurse Ann will be back on Friday. And we have a lot to talk about with her regarding cancer. Cancer is exploding.
I sent you that post today. And a clinician was working urgent care and apparently seeing at least 1 to 2 unexpected cases of cancer for each shift, each 12-hour shift.
How can that be? It can be, and it's being hidden. It's being covered up because we have no real journalism left in this country. They're hiding the truth. You all know that. They've been hiding it since before this whole thing started.
Now, this particular clinician mentioned specifically pancreatic cancer. And, yep. And you know, for some reason, that's a common one these days. It may be because pancreatic cancer can be associated with mutations in that BRCA1 gene, which we know the spike protein interferes with the expression of that gene. And it's the DNA repair pathway. Maybe that's why there could be other reasons. I mean, pancreatic cancer was on the rise anyway before all this. I think it was the third or fourth most common cancer.
Right.
In, Western populations, it may be related to diet or other environmental toxicities, but it's very common now in these people who have had the vax. And it tends to be diagnosed late.
Late. Very late.
You know, it's one of these ones that sneaks along and really has no symptoms until it's very advanced, and then you're very limited in how you could treat it.
Why do they call it soft tissue cancer? It's a term I hear kicked around a lot. I guess it's because you can actually feel it at some point. And that's when most people get alarmed and they run to the doctor. What's his lump? And they do a biopsy.
Yeah, and quite often it's painless. You know, and unless it's pressing on a nerve or something, it's relatively painless.
Well, a long time ago, somebody told me cancer isn't painful in its early stages. It doesn't hurt.
Right.
You don't know you have it.
Right.
And these people going in now are being told, literally, can you imagine this? They go in for a battery of tests, and they sit down in the office with the doctor, oncologist, and they're told, well, I'm really sorry, you have stage 4 pancreatic cancer, or stage 4 kidney cancer, or God forbid, a glioblastoma, a brain cancer, stage 4. And they didn't know. And they're hit with this, sitting in the office, not a clue, no symptoms, and they feel fine. Well, most everyone who's taken the injections, the bioweapon injections, are microclotting. We know that. And if you look on the homepage, many of you have seen it. It's been picked up now. It's around. Somebody in shorts was, I guess, imaged with a thermo camera that picks up heat. And this person said he felt fine, no problems, everything was normal, I had my shots, I'm fine. And this thermal imaging camera showed clots all over his legs. These are big clots, 6-8 inches long. And he didn't know. How can people not know? That's a big question.
The body can, you know, they can work around some of these clots. You know, so to compensate for the blockages, that's probably happening to some extent. But it is odd that you wouldn't have some fairly significant discomfort with something like that growing in you,
growing in a
blood vessel.
Right. Deep vein thrombosis, DVT. People usually complain about that. It's a clot, and it's usually in their legs, and they feel it. But this guy felt nothing. And it's our estimation that everyone who's been shot up, and probably a good number of people who have simply been shed upon, are microclotting and have clots.
Yeah, it seems so.
Again, that's a projection, but it's a very logical and pragmatic one, judging by what we're seeing.
They have determined that there is a genetic mutation that predisposes some people to forming these or not being able to break down some of these clots called PAI1, and it's called short for plasminogen activated activator inhibitor 1. And if you have high levels of this genetically or for other reasons, you will be not capable of breaking these things down as they're being formed and mm-hmm. put you at higher risk for those.
Right.
So they are testing people for that now if they've had the vax and doing the type of blood test that would be able to pick up these amyloid clots. And, you know, it's you have to do more than just a D-dimer to evaluate whether or not.
Am I right? A D-dimer may not necessarily work with an amyloid clot anyhow.
That's right. D-dimer is looking for breakdown products of fibrin. And fibrin is a component of blood. And these things are, you know, they're proteinaceous. They've got fibrin and a whole bunch of other types of proteins in them. And they're not breaking down. So even if you have a normal D-dimer, that doesn't mean you are not forming these amyloid-type clots.
Not to mention the fact that the word amyloid has virtually disappeared. No one's talking about amyloids anymore. Amyloid plaques in the brain, and you're gone over time. Amyloid clots in your heart, in your lungs, in your legs. These are clots that will not show up again on a D-dimer test and may not necessarily hurt you because your body is brilliant at doing workarounds. It's amazing.
And I believe it was Dr. Burkhardt in Germany that they actually did determine what the composition of these clots were. And they found, I think it was 132 different proteins that were associated with the endothelium. So it's basically starting with a sloughing of the lining of the blood vessel. Because the blood vessel is so damaged from the inflammation of the spike proteins, it's just falling apart and the debris ends up in the bloodstream and then aggregating and coagulating and forming these thick proteinaceous clots that are just resistant to the normal mechanisms for breaking clots down.
Another source of the protein material are misfolded proteins. And
yes,
any protein
in the blood.
Of any type, yes, that goes by a cleaved, right? A cleaved killer protein, otherwise known as the spike, will probably run into one of the seven little points on that spike that will cause that protein, a normal protein of unlimited numbers, to misfold. And once it misfolds, it can no longer do what it was designed to do, and it begins to agglutinate with other misfolded proteins caused by the spike. And those things are also at the base composition of amyloids. They're proteinaceous materials that build up in the brain. It can build up anywhere. Anywhere there's blood, the spike goes and causes proteins to misfold. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and you've got the inflammation by itself generates all these acute phase reactants like fibrin, fibrinogen, serum A, serum amyloid. So all of these inflammatory proteins start to elevate, and they can contribute to this viscous blood with a tendency to form these aggregates.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget that everyone who has taken a shot who has been evaluated has thick blood. It's no longer easily withdrawn, and a blood draw, and we'll hear from Nurse Ann Friday on that. It's different. That
can be deceptive too, because I have heard from the same person with the myocarditis. Mm-hmm. Her blood was very thick after the shot and after she began to manifest these symptoms of myocarditis. But a year later, she thought she was normal. She thought her blood was in good shape, and she went to have it drawn for the purposes of the amyloid test.
Uh-huh.
And it came out, it looked normal when it came out, didn't look unusually thick, but when the results of the test came back, her blood was loaded with this type of amyloid material.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Loaded.
All right. Very good. We're going to shift gears now. We have a five-minute video we want to play. Erica found this. I think it's very important. Many of you know about mold. Most people think, black mold in my house. Well, your house can be a repository of a number of different kinds of molds. Tell us very quickly what molds do to people, the mycotoxins.
Yeah, molds, whether they're in your living space, behind walls, I mean, any sort of water-damaged building has a potential for generating mold and toxic molds. The mycotoxins are substances, chemicals that molds produce and spew into the environment. And even if they're behind a wall, these toxins are, some of them are VOC, so they're almost gaseous. They can go right through the wall and enter your living space, and you can breathe them in. And you can be made very, very sick. Some of these are, at least four of them are known to cause cancer. They're neurotoxic. You know, if it gets bad enough, I know someone who almost went blind from mold-related illness. So they can cause a whole raft of symptoms.
They're oncological. I didn't know this.
There are four species of molds that are known to be carcinogenic. And not all of them, but there are four species that are definitely associated with cancer. You know, aflatoxin, which is one that typically contaminates peanuts, sometimes grains, and then you would ingest them. The worst way to be exposed, though, is through the respiratory tract when you breathe in these chemicals, toxins. They get right into the blood and start to do damage. And they seem to have a lot of similarity with what some people are experiencing when they're exposed to whatever's coming off the vaxxed. Same types of reactions, and now there is a subset of people, about 25% of the population, that is predisposed to not being able to handle biotoxins. Their detox pathways are limited. Their immune systems very quickly get involved and create a very inflammatory reaction that makes them feel absolutely miserable. We're starting to see that with some of these people with the long COVID, the people that acquire the virus and become infected with it but can't seem to get over it, also may have mold toxicity and or Lyme disease. So these intracellular toxins, as mycotoxins are really creating a susceptibility for people when they're exposed to the bioweapon. If you're living in a house that has mold, or if your body has been colonized by mold, when you're exposed to EMF, that mold reacts to it and becomes infinitely more toxic.
Yeah. Where do you hear this video?
This was research that was conducted 10 or 11 years ago now. And it was first publicized by Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, who many will know as the probably the world's authority on treating Lyme disease. He's a functional doctor. I believe he's in Seattle these days in the UK. But anyway, he's world-renowned for his contributions to the world of functional medicine. And he publicized this informal study that a colleague of his had done in Switzerland, and where they took a Petri dish, two Petri dishes, colonized them with mold, and then covered one with some EMF shielding, silver cloth, and let it grow, and then the other one just left it out to be exposed to the ambient amount of EMFs in the environment at that time. And we didn't have 5G at that time, 10 or 11 years ago. We were still at probably mostly 3G or at most 4G.
Right.
And the results of this study was the mold that didn't have any shielding produced 600 times more toxins than the mold that had been shielded from the EMF. So these microorganisms do respond to EMFs, and we have to assume nowadays, because we're saturated with this stuff, that our health is really being impacted by this. And if you're living in a moldy house, you're going to have a lot more trouble dealing with this bioweapon assault and whatever else they're going to throw at us.
Right. That's why a lot of people who have mold issues in their homes are really screaming and complaining. They can't get rid of it. They become hypersensitized to it. But not necessarily just hypersensitized. If the mold itself, because of the EMF exposure, is actually 600 times more toxic, well, listen to this video. Here, take a listen. I think a lot of you will really relate to this because you have mold issues in your home.
Now I'm going to make this link, and then we get into the solutions. Now I'm going to make the link to the electromagnetic fields. An acquainted physician in Switzerland who is the main mold researcher in Europe made a beautiful experiment. He grew mold cultures under a Faraday cage, just simply like it looks like a mosquito net that is made out of silver-coated cloth that's been draped over the mold culture. And he measured how much mycotoxins, how much toxins are these molds producing on a daily basis. It's pretty easy to do.
So what he did was he had a petri dish, as Erica mentioned. He draped over a silver impregnated cloth over the dish, and they measured the emissions from the mold.
Then he lifted the mosquito net and exposed the mold culture to the ambient electromagnetic radiation in his laboratory, which was caused by the lights that were on the computer in a corner, and especially, he found that later, the ambient cell phone radiation, from the nearby cell phone tower that was broadcasting cell phone radiation. He found out that the production of biotoxins in this culture went up more than 600 times. Not only that the mold suddenly put out significantly more mycotoxins to protect themselves, but also much more virulent, much more vicious, more poisonous mycotoxins. And I took that experiment was for me a big light bulb went on. And that is, when you have a mom, I bring it back now to the mom that has maybe low-grade Lyme disease, clinically not relevant Lyme disease. She has an infection. There's a few microbes in there that shouldn't be there, but mom is doing well. Now you expose this mom to significant amounts of electromagnetic fields of the same nature as in this laboratory in Switzerland. The molds inside us and the Lyme spirochetes inside this mom suddenly believe they're being attacked, or they feel they're being attacked, and they respond to that attack with the only mechanism that they have, and that is to produce more potent biotoxins and more biotoxins and more potent biotoxins.
So they did the same thing in the woman, the mom, he calls her, as they did in the petri dish. This is very important. When you think about it, don't get hung up on 5G. Any EMF source like that.
That's right.
We are blanketed with them. 150 years ago, there weren't any. There was no EMF on this planet except occasional lightning strike or a little bit of solar radiation. That was it. So in 150 years, now we are swimming in EMF.
And with that, suddenly mom's system is overwhelmed with biotoxins, and also the molds and the spirochetes and the mycoplasma starts multiplying. They think they're being attacked. They're threatened to be extinguished. And so their response is to make more babies. So there's more of them. So chances of their genes to survive are higher. This is a simple, pure biological response that can be seen anywhere in nature. And so what we have now, to give you some numbers, that I know that you're, Joe, you're familiar with this, but we know that in the last 20 years, if you measure the density of electromagnetic fields that we're exposed to, if you measure the amount of cell phone radiation in a cubic inch of air, it is now several million times higher than it was just 10 years ago. Millions of times higher than it was 10 years ago. These are unbelievable exposures. And as you're familiar with the research, the true research done on cell phone radiation shows it is not safe. There's significant biological effects inside the cell. The cell phone radiation disrupts the communication inside the cell membrane, and the whole kinases, the mechanisms that we have to transport signals from the cell wall to the DNA and backwards. It has been shown that cell phone radiation exposure to a fetus tweaks a number of genes, exactly what we find in the autistic kids, and so forth. And so I am postulating, and I can back it up with my clinical results, that the combination of mom having low-grade infections, it may just be viral or mold, yeast, or it may be Lyme disease, that this mom that is pregnant today is exposed to millions of times more electromagnetic radiation than she was just 10 years ago. And this, the increase in electromagnetic field exposure in combination with the growth driving effect it has on the microbiome in us explains the incredible avalanche of children with neurodevelopmental disorders, not just autism, that we're seeing right now. And so this puts the point of intervention much earlier. Before a mom gets pregnant, I want to establish, does she have Lyme disease? Does she not have Lyme disease? If the answer is yes, she needs to be treated during the entire pregnancy. Then secondly, during the pregnancy, I can do wonderful things by decreasing the electromagnetic field exposure.
Okay, that's it. So 10 years, and now all of us are being exposed to and being victimized by millions of times more concentrated EMF. Millions at the cellular level and the DNA level. I think this thing can do anything. Go ahead.
It's so easy to overlook it because, you know, it's invisible unless you've got a meter or you've become EMF sensitive, as many people have. You're not aware that it's, you're being affected by it, other than you have strange symptoms or you're sick and you don't know why. Several years ago, I heard multiple stories, several stories, I would say, of people with chronic illness that, you know, would drag themselves from doctor to doctor and try this protocol and some other protocol, and spending thousands of dollars trying to get well. But nothing changed until they addressed their EMF exposure, and then everything got better. So when you're trying to get well, regardless of what it is, you cannot underestimate the contribution of these environmental EMFs. They're very, very disruptive to the signaling that has to take place in the body to maintain homeostasis. So there's ways to mitigate. Yes. You know, it is costly, but you know, what's your health worth?
Your best bet, if you can afford it, is to get one of those. It's like a mosquito net that goes from the ceiling around your bed all the way around. It's like a mosquito net. You open it up and get in and out of bed. It's got silver mesh on it, and it stops. It's like a Faraday cage without being like a cage. It's just a draped mosquito net with a perfect way to handle EMF. So at least when you're asleep, you can get away
with it. Yeah, it's critical.
Get away with it. And
sleep
again,
is critical.
If you can't afford that, they have, it's kind of like a little, it's a mesh net that is designed to be put over your head while you're asleep. It comes down to about your shoulders. It's just like a loose-fitting sock for your head. And that'll cut it all out. Your brain won't be being pounded all night. I have one of those, and it's made a difference, a real difference. I think lessemf.com, no interest in pushing it beyond that. It's just a very good company. They have excellent products, so take a look. Okay, we only have a minute or so left. Anything we missed that we want to mention here? This has been, I think, hopefully beneficial and helpful to all of you out there. When you look at these videos of these self-styled experts out there, understand that they're not trained professional journalists, and they are pushing agendas. Don't be afraid of ivermectin. Do your research, but I would always have some on hand. That's just me.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, the anecdotal evidence, the clinical evidence, the you know, 40 years of research on it, I think it's fairly solid.
I can't think of anything that's been tested more thoroughly than ivermectin off the top of my head. It has really been put under scrutiny, and it has passed with flying colors. So, and again, You're not going to give a $50 million racehorse a tube of poison.
Right.
No way. Not going to happen. So those horses are more valuable than people to most of the owners in that business. It's crazy. So, okay, Friday, Nurse Ann will be here. We're going to talk about cancer. And if you have anything you'd like to submit to the program, just send it on in, and we'll take a look at it, because cancer is now everywhere. And it's stealth. It's particularly vicious because it'll show up at a stage 4, usually, that prevents oncologists from even coming up with a plan to try to fight it. You're gone. People have been gone in a matter of days after diagnosis. So we'll talk more about that Friday. All right? Final comment?
No, that's it. Good.
Good job.
Okay.
All right. See you.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
And there she goes. All right. We'll be back with Major George Filer next hour. We're going to talk about deep underground military bases, underwater, undersea, suspected ET bases as well. Lots ahead, so stay right there, and we'll be back.